You're listening to BQN. Assimilate the audio. Welcome, listeners, to another episode of All Good Things, a Star Trek Universe podcast here on BQN and the Fandom Podcast Network. I am your host, Amy, and with me today is Mark. Hey, Mark, how's it going?
Hi, Amy. How are you?
I am doing great. The severe heat warning that has been happening all week in Las Vegas has finally subsided. We are not in the 100s. Oh, it feels wonderful.
Okay, listeners, if you didn't know already, I'm in Boston. Amy, do you see what I'm wearing right now?
I know. What is that?
I'm in a hoodie. Yes.
I mean, a jumper for our UK friends.
It's 66 degrees here right now.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Girl.
Mm. Mm-mm.
Sweater weather.
Our low is 81.
I'm so jealous.
But Star Trek Day yesterday, as of this recording, I was working and I only got to hear other people's reactions. So I didn't see anything, but I am planning to maybe go back to Paramount and Plus and watch it.
You should.
Over the weekend.
I was so interested. I jumped on during my lunch break, but I'm on the East Coast, and so it wasn't doing anything. And I'm like, oh, wait, I got to wait till after work. So it started around the time I was leaving work. So I just put it on, and literally, like, on the drive home, the video was playing in my car, and I was just listening. I was like, oh, that's cool. Oh, that's cool. And thankfully, I didn't get an accident because I was kind of watching, too. But it's gridlock traffic, so bumper to bumper, it's fine.
That's even worse.
Yeah. At least I had something to watch.
Well, it looked like a fun event. There were a couple of people in the LA area that were able to actually attend, which I was a little jealous. And I do remember that I was invited to go to Star Trek Day, but it's in the middle of the week. I can't get to California and teach and do all that. So I missed it this year.
I mean, you get all the connections.
I have an amazing Trek family who looks after me, and I'm very blessed to have them. So, are we doing listener feedback, Mark?
Yeah, we actually have some. I think we've gotten some here and there over the last few months, but we've kind of left that to the, you know, the side for a little while. But I thought, you know, this week, let's bring it back because, you know, we got a few.
We did, and it was our STLV recap, so that was always fun. And it was so fun to have Jeremiah on as a special guest, and he wrote on Twitter, "How cool that the release of my first podcast appearance is also on Star Trek Day." Yay!
What a delight. He was so great to talk to, and I really got to get him on that screen because he is so interesting. I could talk to him for hours, and I kind of did at the fake masquerade bar.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had some other comments as well. Our friend David Willett commented on Patreon, "Just like the Galaxy Class episode, I love hearing stories from the con. Hopefully, I'll make it back soon. Sigh." Well, hopefully he does.
Yes, Davey, come back. We miss you. I have met Davey in person, and he's amazing.
We appreciate his Patreon support of the network.
Yes. Well, we have another listener, Iker, who wrote, "Great podcast today. I really liked the around the world section." Well, we have that each and every week, thanks to Mark.
That made me so happy. I'm like, I don't know if people actually like it or not, but I'm just geek out over our listener data. So I'm like, this is just cool. I want to talk about it.
Yes.
And we had one more. Davey Ryan commented on Facebook, "Already listened with a smile on my face and a tiny bit of jealousy." Well, Davey, we wish you were to have been at the con as well. I've seen on Facebook, I think he does some of the Orion cosplay.
And that's also the same as our Patreon. So he commented twice.
Oh.
Yeah.
Davey Ryan and David Willard are the same person.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
No, it's good. It's good.
I thought we had two Davids commenting. Well, thank you, Davey. David, appreciate it.
I know. Commenting all over the place. What an amazing listener.
Yes, absolutely. Well, now it's time for Iker's favorite section and mine. It's time for All Good World.
From Las Vegas to Boston, USA to Canada and South America, from the United Kingdom to South Africa, from Russia to Australia, the South Pacific and beyond, this is All Good World.
Each episode we highlight a different location around the globe where this podcast has reached. Today's episode we'd love to give a special shout out to Nottingham, England. Picked England this week, obviously the Queen we lost this week, so kind of sad for our English friends and people around the world. A lot of people really looked up to the Queen and her legacy. So my fun fact this week is for England. Nottingham Castle was associated with Nottingham and Sherwood Forest in the tales of Robin Hood, a mythological leader of a band of outlaws in the 12th century England. In the tales, this castle was the abode of the High Sheriff of Nottingham and his second-in-command, Sir Guy of Gisborne. In 2367, the entity, known as Q, transported the senior officers of the USS Enterprise D into a recreation of the 12th century setting in the story of Robin Hood, in an attempt to teach Captain Picard a lesson about love. During the reenactment, Picard had to choose whether to let Maid Marian, who was actually Vash, die or risk his crew's lives trying to rescue her from Nottingham Castle. Now, that was another fun episode.
Yes, it is a fun episode. Not a fan of Vash, but we all know that. But it is a very fun. Oh,
I'll die on that hill. Vash is cool.
Yeah.
And I just found out this year that she actually dated Patrick Stewart in real life. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, well, there's another fun fact. All full of fun facts today.
Well, listeners, as promised 2 weeks ago and last week, we are finally going to cover masks in our Metamorphosis series. This will be part three, because previously we have covered TNG's Identity Crisis and Voyager's Threshold. So this is season 7, episode 17, Masks. And this is the one where the ship gets transformed and Data and Misaka and Ihat. I mean, everyone knows Masks. It's weird episode.
It's the episode that most people skip over. I like this episode. I don't know. It's divisive.
I do too, Mark. So let's talk about that. So I was watching with my brother, who he definitely does not know season 1 or season 7.
Okay.
But he knows very much everything else. And so I'm watching it and he comes walking in and he's like, "Well, I knew you were watching, you know, Star Trek, but what's this episode?" So he sat down and finished it with me and he's like, "Yeah, that's a weird one. What season is it?" And I'm like, "Yeah, it's season 7." He's like, "Oh, that explains it."
Oh, Lord. Season 7 had some good stuff in it, though. I don't know.
Yeah, it did. So, listeners, I would be interested to know, why do some people not enjoy Masks? Is it just because it's so episodic, there's nothing connecting it anywhere?
Mm.
And so, why do you like this episode, Mark?
I was thinking about that after I watched it. And I was out walking Murphy, I was trying to figure out, like, I was thinking about why people dislike it and why I like it. And I think the connective tissue with a lot of the Star Trek episodes that I tend to like, they do tend to be episodes where they don't really go anywhere. Like, it's my favorite Star Trek episodes aren't where they go to a strange planet, aren't where they negotiate peace, aren't where they discover a new this or that. It's the episodes that are a little wackadoo. Like, I love Masks. I love, like, Schisms. I love Frame of Mind. And they're kind of like, you know, they're scary, kind of these episodes. But they're some of my favorites. What's the one where Crusher gets, she's all alone on the ship and everybody else starts disappearing?
Remember Me.
Remember Me. One of my favorite, you know, TNG episodes. It's, you know, I forgot the name of the episode, but everybody knows my memory's bad. But still, that's one of my go-to episodes. But yeah, it's another one that just takes place on the ship, and it's a little wackadoo. I don't know. Those are my favorite ones. What about you, Amy?
Yeah, I like Masks because it is an allegory. It's a beautiful story about a different culture. We're getting hints of who is Masaka and who is the other one.
Organa or
Corgano. Corgano. Yeah. And we're learning bits and pieces throughout it, and sort of through historical, we get Captain Picard getting all excited because he loves
archaeology.
So we've got that aspect. We've got an amazing counseling aspect of multiple personalities, and starts off with Troy. So there's importance for Troy there. Like, it's got just so much of a wonderful story in and of itself. We're telling the story for the story's sake. And yeah. I like that. So it does start off in this classroom where Troy is with the students of the Enterprise, and they're doing some clay molding. And
Amy,
and Data, yes?
Can I ask you a quick question while you're saying that? When you saw Troy in the classroom teaching the kids, did you even for a second think about her on the Orville?
No.
Because her character on the Orville is the teacher.
That's right.
So my head immediately went to the Orville. Anyway.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, that's cool.
Okay, that's it.
So she's in the classroom helping the kids with this molding, but it's more therapeutic. The kids are trying to mold feelings or mold abstractness. And so when she goes to Data, and I love that Data is joining in on this little therapy session, and he's like, and he's so proud. Look, Counselor Troy, I've made a pad. He was, it's exact dimensions, and he was so proud of it. And then, oh, I have to pull a Troy face just like that almost on a daily basis. Like, oh, you've misunderstood the directions, you know? Mm-hmm. And what I loved is she's challenging Data to be more with his imagination, which goes back to previous episodes in Firstborn where he's, you know, dreaming and stuff. So we're getting this existential journey with Data, and it's continuing in this first episode. And Troy says, well, what would you create if you wanted to represent music? So Data, in his very methodical, logical, physical way, draws a treble clef. And again, he's just so proud. This is music. And again, Troy shakes her head. It's like, okay, that's a good start. Of course, you know, you don't want to shut students down. So Mark, I'm asking you, what would you create to represent music?
A wave.
A wave? Why?
Because that's, I don't know what music is to me.
Huh.
I It's easy. Yeah, I don't know. If I see music in my head, it's just like it's like a wave on the ocean. I don't know. Huh. Or a flame, something like that.
Yeah. Wow.
That's what I would sculpt.
That is very interesting.
What would you choose?
See, I'm so literal. Like, my first instinct would be like a keyboard, because I've played the piano. But I know that that's not the task that Troy is wanting us to do. And I need to take...
You and Data have something in common.
Yes, I really need to channel my inner Troy. Because, yeah, it's like, okay, so when I hear music, it generally makes me remember things, right? Feelings or people or events. So, yeah, I don't know what I would create to represent the feeling of music. That's a hard task.
You know, what a cool question. Listeners, what would you create if you were tasked with creating a physical object to represent music?
Yeah. I think the writers did so well with that. So I know there's a lot of transformations going on, and the first one that we get, which I think is a little funny, is that Troy and Crusher are on their way to Makbara class with Worf. I love that tie-in. And they see an object on Troy's table in her quarters. Okay, first of all, why would you not be freaked out that there's an object in your quarters that should not be there? And then why would you think, oh, you have a secret admirer? Who is going into the quarters without permission? And if they were that curious, wouldn't there be a log as to who would override? I would assume that you lock your doors. Maybe I'm coming from a 21st century where, yes, we lock our doors. Maybe in the 24th century, we don't care about locking doors. I don't know.
It's the 24th century, right, Amy? I mean, and you wouldn't expect, people don't, you know, like, steal things anymore, and, like, crime's been eliminated. So in a society without crime, I guess they wouldn't be locking their doors now, would they?
Right, that's what I was thinking. That was my only logical conclusion to that dilemma in my head.
Yeah, and positive intent. I mean, you know, a sweet gesture from somebody, just like, here's a surprise present, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know necessarily, like, if I came home and found something on my countertop, like a bowl of fruit or something that was randomly there, I don't know if I'd be freaked out. I'd be like, oh, who sent me a bowl of fruit?
Yeah, I think we might in our day and age be like, who got into my house? That's what I'd be thinking.
Yeah. But I grew up in the woods in northern Maine, and like I grew up without locked doors in our house. And we would randomly come home and find things on the table that maybe a relative would drop off or something, you know? So it just wasn't weird for me. I don't find it that weird.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also not a city kid, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It shows.
In so many ways.
So one other thing, just right off the beginning, I had that question and then another question. So they find this asteroid probe thing, and why are they not so suspicious of this random, unrecognizable probe that is scanning them? Like, I'm thinking, hello, raise shields. You know what happened on Inner Light? Picard was out, lived this whole lifetime. You should not be allowing probes to be scanning your ship. That's what I was thinking.
Very good point. And it's not like Inner Light had happened after this episode. No, it had happened a long time before this episode. Mm-hmm. And that was the only example. You know, especially in Trek canon, they've come upon random artifacts floating in space, scanned them, and had craziness ensue. Yeah, I don't know. That is a little bit of a stretch of the imagination that they wouldn't be more cautious, because they would be more cautious than the writers made it seem.
Yeah, I think so too. So I was just a little thrown off by that. But seeing all the drawings and the sculptures that are showing up, and then the pictographs that show up like on the kids' console in the classroom, and those start popping up each, you know, around the ship. And what I liked is that when Data was a certain personality, I don't know if you picked up on it, but his breastplate would change depending on which character he was. And I thought that was a very nice touch for the clothing department. What do we call uniform? What's
costume
that called?
Costume department.
Yeah, the costume department, to recognize that and give one more like physical visual that Data has a different personality.
Yeah, and he did so many. And I think, well, they commented at the end of the episode when Picard was having a conversation with him about just how many personalities was inside of him. And he said, oh, you know, there had to have been at least a dozen or so. And then Data was like, well, there's more like thousands.
Right. And that, again, sort of made me think of Data should be used to having records of previous civilizations. Like, he has the entire...
The colony. Where he
right?
was
he
found.
He has all of those. Yeah. And so I'm like, he should be used to filtering through these different personalities. But this one, it had to have been a different way that he was remembering it, because he actually became those people, where he didn't do that with the colony. I think he just had access to it. But I liked, before we lose Data completely, he's like, what does it feel like to lose your mind? And the way that he asked it was so haunting, because you know that he was losing his mind. Like, having those multiple personalities, what would you even say? Much less to just some person, but to an android who doesn't even know what that would feel like. And here he's asking, what does it feel like? I don't know what you could say. I mean, it wasn't answered in the show, so good job, writers, because I don't know what you would say.
Have you ever been in a circumstance, Amy, where you felt like you were losing your mind?
I can think of a couple examples, but they're not losing my mind. I know in one relationship where I was losing myself, and sort of losing my mind when I, second year of calculus, trying to understand the math, not being able to get it, going in for help, like trying to figure it out. But I felt like I was going mad. Like, why have I been able to take all of this math, first year calculus, and now I'm in second year, I should be getting it, and I wasn't? Like, that was a stumbling block for me, but that was not anything like that. So no, I don't think that I've come close to that.
Yeah, that's definitely a different place than I thought you were going to go with it. Yeah, I've definitely, I've definitely been there a few times in my life where I just felt like I was coming completely unglued, too many thoughts happening at once. You know, I have anxiety problems, so the flood of different thoughts or emotions or memories sometimes can be overwhelming. And at that point, you feel a little bit like you're losing your mind, you know? So I've definitely been there where I just needed to slow down, you know, and yeah, everything's just going too fast. Not a fun place to be.
No. Yeah, and here Data is going through this. You know, I wonder, do you think that Data was processing emotions because he had these multiple personalities inside him?
Yes.
Hmm.
I got that from it. And it's weird that they never touch on it again.
Right.
But he experienced them. I guess he doesn't remember them because at the end of the episode, he was like, oh, how did I get here? What are we doing? You know, had that moment in the hallway with Picard. But so I guess he doesn't really remember them. So I guess that's why they don't touch on it again. But he did experience them, at least then.
Hmm. That's interesting. Yeah. And you're right. He did feel them. I agree with you. Yeah.
And he got to keep the mask and Picard got that little flute. And so I guess it goes to show you in Star Trek, if you get, possessed by an alien probe, they usually at least give you a t-shirt. So I got possessed by an alien probe and all I got is this t-shirt.
And all I got was this mask, or yeah. All I got was this
flute.
Oh my gosh. We need to see that. We need to make that.
Hashtag BQN. We'll make that a t-shirt and it'll be swag. We'll sell next year at STLV.
I love it.
Stay tuned.
Okay. One scene that really stood out to me that I never even recognized was when Riker, Geordi, and Data went down to engineering and they're trying to figure out this probe and like, how can we scan inside to get to the middle of it and make it stop transforming us? And the way that they have it shot, and I think the director, whoever it was, I do apologize for not knowing, did a great job with this scene because you've got all three of them and Data's on the left and Riker's on the right and Geordi's sort of in the back and they're having this discussion. But Data, his face, you know, like when you're talking to someone and they're just staring off and they're not listening to you. That was Data. And Geordi and Riker, they're going back with all these good ideas. And Geordi's like, yeah, we can take this from the da-da-da-da-da and, you know, all this techno babble. They walk over and then they're like, what do you think, Data? But that scene right there, I loved it because it was supposed to be a conversation with all three of them, but it felt distinctly two different conversations. Like, the whole time I was watching it, I was listening to Riker and Geordi, but I was wondering, what is Data doing? And I loved that split, and it felt like they each were getting their own story in that moment, that each of them were being highlighted. And again, this whole crew mentality of TNG, I loved it, and I just felt like, yeah, everyone's getting their moment to shine. I don't know why I brought that up, but
no, that's
I really like that
why
scene.
I love TNG as well. You know, that's what makes it really special. It's these moments with each of the characters, and it's not like the Picard show or the Geordi show or the Riker show. You know, it's an ensemble show, and they all, you know, they each have their own episodes throughout the season, but then within the episodes, they have these little moments where it's a little bit of character development or a little bit of time for this character to shine or do something a little different. And I love that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So should we start talking about the transformation, this metamorphosis?
Yeah, let's transform into the next part of the podcast here.
So what did you think about the ship transforming?
I kind of loved it, but I also worried because I'm like, what if the warp core started transferring? That the whole thing would just go boom. So it's a good thing that didn't happen. And life support and all the other systems. So I guess it was just like the lighting and the furniture that started. That was the first to go. That was where my head was at. But I loved the little details, like the thing that was found on Troy's table. The prop department, kudos to them, because all the little artifacts looked really cool in that it was like a big coin thing that on one side had like the moon and the other side had the sun, you know, entity. And the way Picard was holding it, he was looking at the moon, but the audience, we could all see it. It was a little foreshadowing that on the back it was the sun and that they were connected. And I loved that too.
Yeah, I was also getting worried because I'm like, well, what about the hull? Like, if the hull of the ship transforms, then you're going to lose decks, you're going to lose atmosphere, whatever they call it, your fake gravity. Like, it was getting pretty serious than just, you know, throwing a few fronds on the floor or whatever.
I would love to see an episode of Star Trek where the ship loses gravity and they just, most of the crew floats through most of the episode. That'd be so much fun.
Yes.
Hasn't been done yet.
Why hasn't that happened?
It's expensive.
I'm watching The Expanse and they do weightlessness in almost every episode.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. Oh, I wonder, they did a little bit of that in Discovery.
Very little. They've had weightlessness, but just for a second here, a second there. Oh, and they did it in Enterprise. They found at the first episode of Enterprise, if you remember the very first episode or one of the first episodes, they find the spot in the ship where it's like the gravity is really low and they can kind of float.
Yeah.
That's, I don't know why I remember that. I have bad memory, but I remember random stuff like that.
Yeah, Travis Mayweather finds a sweet spot in every ship he's on.
Oh, I think that's right, because it was Travis. Mm. My favorite boomer.
So one other thing, again, I was watching this episode in preparation, and listeners, if you remember at the top of this podcast, I was complaining of this massive heat warning. We were over 110 degrees for like 5 days. And here I am watching Masks, and E-Hot is describing Misaka, how she's cruel and scorches you and you will dehydrate and the heat and the burning. And I'm like, E-Hot is describing Las Vegas right now. That's exactly what I felt. You open the door and I felt like I was being burned by Misaka. That's seriously.
But it's a dry heat.
It is a dry heat. But again, getting different parts of the story from Data's character, that was one thing that I really liked. When the old man, Misaka's father, was... It was the scare... Oh, who was it that was telling him, there's the line and the curve, and he was drawing it in the sand?
It was the old man, wasn't it? Yeah. The old man got... he was found and, I guess, killed.
And so, like, Picard, like, takes his hand and tries to redraw it to get the rest of the symbol. That was... I felt very tender and, like, a really good response for Picard to do to try and get a memory from an old person. I thought that was very tender.
Yeah.
So, did you like the allegory of the sun and the moon and the chasing and the being chased?
Oh, it was beautiful. This was, the story was so, it was a really wackadoo story, don't get me wrong. But it sounded like something that would have been like an old historical tale from a lost civilization from thousands of years ago. Like you... This is something that you would think would be a historical story. They did a really good job. Maybe it is. Maybe they just stole it. But and I'm thinking that because it's so good. It really sounds like something that an old civilization would have believed in.
Absolutely. And how universal is, you know, seeing a sun and a moon, you know, and going through, and of course, you know, the moon's phases and how the new moon, you can't see it. So the sun is brilliant and bright. So Misaka's got her glory, you know, and then you get the full moon and now Corgano has the glory. And I really enjoyed that whole cycle, you know, and when Picard was like, but you want to be chased. Aren't you tired of burning and, you know, being in the spotlight? And it's like all of those themes are just sort of universal. I loved seeing that. And then, yeah, to your point, like the history and the archaeology, and like that's something that we would see. My mind went like Aztec, but you know, sort of Mayan or, you know, something like that.
It was around the same time.
Yeah. But I could imagine it happening on some other galaxy. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, civilizations progress very similarly, I believe. And so recognizing what you see in the sky is like the first step. And so, yeah, this story, universal.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you see it with different, not only different civilizations of humanity on Earth, with different throughout history representations of, like, you know, the moon and the sun and believing it to be deities and what have you, but within the animal kingdom, animals behave differently depending on moon phases and things like that. And so, I mean, that's just science. It's like it affects beings that have a consciousness that can pay attention to that kind of thing. They behave differently and believe something. I don't know what the, you know, the wolves believe when they see the full moon, but they do behave differently.
As do students.
As do drivers.
We always know, all the teachers, it must be a full moon. No, but to your point, like that goes and supports the story of Masaka and Corgano, sort of almost as these gods or mythological gods, mm-hmm. like, because the animals are, like you're saying, and people are going to act differently with the sun out versus the full moon. And so it's like this god in small g has power over the earth right now, because look at how these animals and people are acting on this full moon versus a new moon or, you know, whatever. And so I can see that they might be worshiping or recognizing this power of the sun, the power of the moon. And it really reminded me this allegory of in Darmok when Picard shares with Gilgamesh. Right? Mm-hmm. It's just this allegory, this story, and it really brought me back to that. And both of those episodes were written by Joe Manosky, who's, I love his writing. Wow. Yes.
And the Darmok episode is just, well, that's very classic. That's classic TNG. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Another aspect I liked about masks is that at the end, when they're putting on the mask, it's sort of like a theatrical play. And they're each playing their parts, Data, well, I guess we would say Musaka and Corgano. Mm-hmm. And I liked when they were trying to figure out, like, how can I become Corgano? And it was just as simple as putting on a mask and then being enveloped into this play type of thing where Data is Misaka.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I liked it's like I was almost watching, I could see this like at the Shakespearean festival, you know, that I could see Corgano and Musaka as if it were a play.
Maybe it could be.
I know. It should be.
That'd be fun at the STLV to put that on. A masks right? play.
We need a playwright to do that, and we can have Corgano and Musaka.
There's got to be somebody listening. We have listeners all over the world.
We do.
There's one of them that's a playwright.
Yes. Now, at the end, I didn't care for the reset button. I think they could have done a better job of, oh, Musaka is going to rest, and then everything, really cool special effects, I'll give you that.
Oh, everything sort of melting back to the way it was, yeah.
Yeah. And it was like this energy wave went through the Enterprise and converted everything literally within 5 seconds. And oh, we have reset. Everything's back to normal.
Mm.
That's, I know, TNG. But I did not care for that reset button.
Yeah, it was a little, the ending was a little on the weak side. I thought of that when Data kind of just collapsed, and or Mosaka just kind of collapsed and took a nap.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, that's sort of anticlimactic.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it ran out of time, or they spent so much time developing or figuring out how they were going to develop and put this thing together that the conclusion kind of got, I guess, less attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we all know TNG loves its reset. Next week, we won't even discuss it, but this one was a little weak.
Remember when 10 forward was this temple and there was a waterfall? Oh.
All right, Mark, do we have some trivia for this episode?
Oh my goodness, there's so much trivia. I got some random stuff this week for trivia. So the first bit of trivia I have here is from Ronald D. Moore. I love Ronald D. Moore. I love his quotes. This is a quote from Ronald D. Moore about this episode. I remember seeing the initial story and saying, Jesus, what is this? It was pretty out there, and then the script came in, and we all sort of scratched our heads and looked at each other and wondered, what is he smoking out there in the Alps? But when we started to examine it and get into it a little more, we saw that what he was doing, he has some real interesting ideas, and he approaches things from a fresh angle. So I thought that was cool.
Yes, that does describe Joe Manosky.
What was he smoking out there in the Alps?
That is so funny. Oh my gosh. Well, Brent Spiner found this episode to be one of his most difficult acting assignments on the series. He says, quote, I had some good stuff on the seventh season. I just wish they had been scheduled differently. I got the script for Masks the night before we shot it, and I was finishing Thine Own Self the midnight before. So I didn't have the time to even absorb the script and digest it and figure out who these people were that I was playing. I think I said to Jen at the time, give me 6 months and I think I could give all the characters their due. But as it was, I didn't know who these people were, so I was doing instant acting and just coming up with whatever I was coming up with because we had to put it to film. What an amazing credit to Brent Spiner.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know. You would think after watching that and his creation of the characters and how different they were, that he had time to develop it, but he didn't.
Yeah, and his acting abilities were on full display in this episode, and I love it. Like, each character is so distinct, and like, you can just feel like the old woman, and you know, there's like a young, you know, kid there and an old man, and just it ran the gambit of different characters, and like, he was doing different voices, and just the way his posture was, the way he was holding himself, and his eyes, like, he did some acting just with his eyes. Like, you could tell that he was inhabiting a different character. And all of that just kind of on the spot, last minute. It's like, kudos, Brent. That was really good.
Yes. And one other little bit since we're talking Brent Spiner, I remember listening to Marina Sirtis, many panels, but she has said that she loves working with Brent Spiner. He is hilarious and just a professional, and she regrets not getting more scenes with just her and Data. And so at the beginning of this episode, and I saw them together, I'm like, oh, Marina is so happy because she's working with Brent Spiner. So a credit again to Brent Spiner.
Oh, that's sweet.
I know.
According to science consultant Andre Bormanis, the explanation given in the original script was that the Archive was an advanced Genesis device that mistook the Enterprise for a world to recreate the ancient society on. So that kind of makes sense. A little bit.
Yeah, and then we get that pull in to the original series
mm-hmm.
with the Genesis.
Yeah. Genesis.
Genesis, also a season 7 episode. Well, Eric Burton, the child in the sculpting class, was played by Ricky Deshaun Collins and had a total of 3 appearances, which I did not know. I didn't even recognize that cute kid. He's in Liaisons and, of course, Masks and in Firstborn.
Yeah. And this is trivia that wasn't actually listed on the site. He was listed as a guest actor. I clicked on the link and then read more about him. I'm like, this is actually a really interesting kind of fact, because I thought it was just like a throwaway one-off kid actor for this episode. But they named him in this episode. Like, he gave his character a name. He had his own page on the Memory Alpha. And they talked about his friendship with Worf's son, Alexander, and, you know, other, you know, things he was involved with on the Enterprise. And I was like, wow, that's kind of cool.
Huh.
And he was in, Home Improvement with Tim Allen. And he's got a whole bunch of credits, acting credits and stuff that he did after this. Yeah.
Well, how fun. Yes, he is a cute kid. I'm trying to...
What honestly struck me when I saw him at the beginning of the episode, I was like, that costume he's wearing, I loved. And I was like, that would be fun cosplay. That jumper, it was like purple and blue. I was like, mm-hmm. I kind of like it. I got to get somebody to make me that for a convention. And I'll just walk around with the mask.
Well, Mark, final thoughts on Masks.
Masks is, again, one of those standout episodes for me of TNG where it spends more time developing our favorite characters and showcasing the acting ability of these, you know, actors that portray them, and less time with explosions or with, you know, like world building. Yeah, it's just, I don't know, I like these kind of, it's kind of a bottle episode in itself. It just kind of takes place on the Enterprise. And I think it's a fun episode. It makes you think. There's a lot of, I guess, tie-ins to the history of TNG, because you get some of Picard's archaeology. You get the reference to the Makbara with Worf and the friendship between Deanna Troi and Beverly Crusher. And there's so much in there. Like, if this was Lower Decks, you'd be like, oh, reference, reference, reference. But it's happening within the 7th season of TNG, and they're already, like, you know, the member berries. I don't know, but I love it on so many levels. It's a great episode. I think that people that hate it should give it another watch. Maybe it'll change their mind.
Yes, I agree. The callbacks, I love that they're doing it finally in season 7. You know, they should do it more often. I like it. Like you said, in Lower Decks, we love it. And we can see more of it in TNG. Beverly and Troi going to Makbara with Worf and their gym bags, their metallic gym bags. How cool are they? And also one other thing I noticed, did the Enterprise get an upgrade with the bridge? Or, like, it seemed like the carpet was brighter. I don't know. I feel like I saw some visual differences with the sets. I was like, oh, well, it's season 7. Of course, they're going to change from season 1. But I really do enjoy Masks. One, because it starts off with Troi. Troi does have an important part in this. But Data, like, steals the show. He's so good, but not in your face. Like, it's not garish. Like, he's so good. Oh, okay. And the allegory and the whole story, I really, really like. I like the words and the phrase of Masaka and Corgano. Like, sometimes I wonder, like, how do people come up with these unique, original, foreign, or alien-sounding names? It's pretty cool.
Chaka, when the walls fell.
See? Like, it's just amazing. I love Joe Manosky episodes. This is one that is definitely, I mean, Ronald D. Moore did say it, out there. what was he smoking? But what a brilliant episode it was. Lots of callbacks, good showing of Brent's acting abilities. Everyone sort of gets their own little part to play in this mystery of what's going on. And then we get, this lovely allegory at the end. It's, I think, a great episode. Well, what are we going to talk about next week, Mark?
Well, next week's episode, I'm always excited. I pick the episode list and I love all of them. So I'm excited to talk about this one, too. So next week, we are going to continue a time travel series. This is going to be part 4. And this episode is the TOS episode, Assignment Earth, which you might not necessarily immediately remember, but I remember it connects directly with Picard Season 2. This is the episode that starts all of it. So anyway, Amy, I think I don't know if you've watched it in a while, but once you see it, you're going to be like, oh, wow. Oh, wow. Yes. Just like in Picard. So,
So the only reason why I recognize the title Assignment Earth is because everyone was talking about it. Is this the one? Is Gary? Is that?
Yeah, Gary There's... 7.
Oh, okay. Name. Yeah, everyone was talking about it. And I was like, oh, I should probably go watch it. And did I? No, I did not. So.
The secretary lady was at the convention this year, I think.
The who?
The secretary lady from this episode. Played Gary 7's secretary. I think she was at the convention. Anyway.
Oh, good. Yeah. My knowledge of TOS is so bad. So bad.
Well, this is going to help. We're hopping around. You're going to watch more.
Yes. Yeah. Listeners, we would love to hear what you thought of today's episode. There were lots of questions we asked you, so please write to us, talk to us. You can do that on Facebook, our listeners group, BQN Collective, or on Twitter or Instagram. Oh, what's our Twitter? You're wondering. It's at AllGoodPod. And on Instagram, it's our network page at BQN Podcast. We've also partnered with our friends at Fandom Podcast Network, so you can find us there in the master feed over there. So, Mark, where can people find you when you are chasing Masaka?
Well, when I'm not chasing Masaka, I'm probably smoking with Joe Manosky. And when I'm not doing that...
Nice.
When I'm not doing that, you can find me in the BQN Collective. You can find me on Twitter at MarkWhite207. And become a patron of the network on Patreon, like our friend David Willett. You can hear my show, It's Green. You can find me there. And Amy, when you are not discovering random objects on your kitchen table as you prepare for a makbara match, where can people find you?
Well, I hope it's from a secret admirer. That would be cool. You can find me here on the network where I'm co-hosting Galaxy Class, which talks about Next Generation. You can find me on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson. Oh, yeah, you know what? I'm also on Union Federation, where, oh my gosh, we need to figure out what we're going to do, because Orville is now done, but we're still covering New Trek. We are going to go back and, pair up some episodes of the Orville with Star Trek episodes and do a compare and contrast, so that's always fun. You can do that. And if you are a patron, I have a new math moment that I will be sharing with you very soon.
Oh, that's exciting. Awesome. I love your math moments.
So please hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a star rating and written review. That helps others to find the show, and that's a great way to support us also.
Absolutely. And at this time, we'd like to thank our executive producers who make all of this possible. They are me, Amy, Tony, Ken. We'd like to thank our associate producers, Mandarin Radication and Tim Cooper. And a special thanks to Tony for our artwork and Graham Kelly for our opening and closing music.
If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Join the Hive to enjoy its green, Amy's math moments, and other network perks. With a monthly subscription of $5 or more, you can join our meetings on the Hive Mind. That's going to be happening, hosted by me. And you can visit patreon.com/BQN to get all the details and watch your messages. Thank you for listening. And we hope you'll join us as we search out
all good things.
Previously on BQN, All Good Things, a Star Trek Universe podcast.
They're feeling bad, and they try to self-medicate to feel better. And that's why mental health, for example, is so important to help people cope with things so they don't turn to drugs to cope on their own. Mm-hmm. There's my Nancy Reagan moment.
There you go. See, we were raised in the DARE program.
Yeah.
Infinite Diversity, a Star Trek Universe podcast.
I love that Pike cooks with cast iron, because I truly could not imagine him using any other kind of pants.
I didn't even notice that.
It's just, that's that a very in-character thing for him to cook on, like, mm-hmm. this, you know, seasoned cast iron. It's probably, like, 300 years old, and I'm sure, yeah.
Galaxy Class, a Star Trek The Next Generation podcast.
But the biggest reason, of course, being that, you know, Worf is undiscommunicated. So his, you know, obviously, redemption.
How would we say that?
Commendated?
Or commendated, yeah. If he was discommendated, then
Right. Commendated?
I accommodated.
Accommodated.
There we go.
You will find these and more of your favorite podcasts on BQN.